Hi, I'm Joe from As Joe Flies.
And I'm Leslie from Trips with Tykes.
And welcome to this bonus episode, finishing up the trip report. It was too long to put in one episode, but then we didn't want to stretch this trip out until like a month of episodes. So we're releasing this separately on the feed. Have 3 days left at Walt Disney World to discuss. We'll try to move through these a little bit quicker without any big overarching thoughts at the end. So day five, day six, and day seven, I had the benefit of each successive day. Every day, my wife said, this was the best day that we've had at Disney World. So we ended the whole entire trip on a high note. So I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah, that's always good. It's always good for wife to be happy as well. But glad it just kept getting better. And presumably you were learning from, you know, mistakes along the way and improving upon the strategy.
Yeah, I would say, unfortunately, I think Magic Kingdom day four, that was probably the low light. And then it was all uphill from there. Now, the nice thing about day five was we took things pretty easy. We went to Epcot pretty late in the day, and then we went to the pool, and then we just ended up back at Epcot, although I took a couple of my kids to Magic Kingdom in the middle of that. Now, one low for the day was, and we'll stick with that high-low motif for this episode, one low for the day is that we really should have planned a rest day, like I said, in Disney Do's or Don'ts in the first half of this trip report. And what happened was, Genie Plus, it felt kind of wasted at Epcot. I didn't really get to use that many lightning lanes. I think I only used one lightning lane for that entire day. And so, you know, for $15, that's just did not feel worth it. My question for you, Leslie, is I could not decide whether I should have just added Genie Plus to the entire ticket so that it's like a sunk cost and I'm not worried about it and not feeling like I'm wasting it, or debate like each day whether I should add it or not. So I'm curious to hear what are your opinions on whether you should just add Genie Plus to your whole ticket or do it day by day, or what do you think works best for you?
Yeah, I've been debating this as I'm planning my own trip for June. And as of right now, I bought it for the entirety of my ticket. And here's why. I mean, yeah, there's sort of the sunk cost. It's sort of like, this is what we're budgeting for our trip. And, you know, the same reason people buy the dining plan in advance, you know, they're going to buy a Genie for the length of ticket. But the other thing was, I mean, there's so many things that are wrong with Disney IT that I guess I'm a little bit scared to buy it day by day. Like, do I have to stay up till midnight if I'm going to buy it daily? Or am I going to risk, you know, getting up at 6:45? And then what if there's an error and I can't buy it in time? And then, you know, I've wrecked my day and my sleep and all of that. So for me, I mean, my trip in June is just going to be my son and me. So it's only, you know, $30 total for the two of us per day. I mean, the calculation becomes a little bit different when you're talking about a family of five. But yeah, I mean, that's something that I think a lot of people need to think about. And for me, I'm adding it to the whole thing so I don't have the worry and the hassle.
Yeah, definitely. The sad thing is only Disney could convince us to pay more money because their IT is bad. It's just a sad state of affairs.
Yeah. But, thanks a lot, Disney.
What are you going to do? It is what it is. Now, another low, which kind of ran throughout the entire trip, was we made an agreement as a family before we got there because Disney had just dropped the mask requirements before that. Although I don't think this would have affected this particular decision, but we decided to only eat outdoors. And that was really tough at Disney World because that meant we were mostly eating quick service, and that meant we were mostly eating chicken fingers and burgers the entire time. So like last episode, I said Tony's Town Square was a really good change of pace. Trattoria Al Forno mobile order, that was excellent as well. But we just had so much quick service, and that led to things like one day we got quick service at the UK Pavilion. So we got fish and chips. We got two orders of fish and chips, and we were like walking back to our hotel, and then we dropped one order on the floor. I will not tell you whether we did or did not peel the batter off and eat the inside of the adults, of course. Oh, wow. It's stressful times, okay? When you don't have table service restaurants, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. We didn't make our kids eat it, all right? And we took the batter off, okay? And we didn't eat the fries.
That's right.
Now I just feel terrible saying this all out loud. But I think that was kind of the reality of choosing on this trip to only eat outdoors. It made things very difficult for us. I think the other thing is the nice thing about table service restaurants in general is it forces you to slow down, and we didn't have that.
Yeah, that's very fair. There just really aren't as many good outside choices at Disney World. I mean, it's a little bit of a different situation in Disneyland, so I haven't bumped up against that, but that's important for folks as they sort of plan long term. And I do find it very ironic, Joe, that you were eating outside to avoid infectious diseases, but yet you were totally okay eating a dropped chicken finger. You know, no comment.
How dare you, Leslie? I did not say that our logic was sound, okay? It was just what we were doing in the moment. And there are other outdoor restaurants to eat at, like Grand Floridian Cafe or Geyser Point, but it just kind of didn't fit into our schedule. In terms of in the park eating, it was tough to find table service restaurants outside. And yeah, I'm still not over the fish and chips thing. Okay, it was less than 5 seconds, all right? That's scientifically proven.
Scientifically, Leslie. The science is sound on that one, Joe.
Yes, the science never changes.
Okay. Never.
Anyway, all right, so let's get to the highs. Like I said, we went to Epcot, did a couple attractions, then came back for a pool day in the afternoon, and that was really awesome. I mean, rolling into Epcot at like 11 or 12, leaving at 2 or 3, and then spending your day at the pool, it was a really nice day. Like I said in the last episode, the boardwalk pool is awesome, and we really enjoyed it. And then after that, I took my kids, and we really enjoyed ourselves. I took the older kids, and we took the monorail, and we took the bus to Magic Kingdom. We got the bus to ourselves, so that was pretty great. But then, of course, one of the lows was we were going there to ride on Splash Mountain, and Splash Mountain shut down like as we were arriving at Magic Kingdom. So we ended up going to Magic Kingdom for only one attraction, Buzz Lightyear Lightning Lane. So that was a bit of a fail as well. Luckily, we took the monorail back to Epcot for extended evening hours that night. So it was, you know, for the kids, that was like a ride, but it was pretty rough going all the way to Magic Kingdom and then the one attraction we were trying to ride going down.
Yeah, the attraction closures are a bummer, but did you get a multiple experiences and use it on Buzz? Is that what you ended up doing?
No, I had Buzz separately and I got a multiple experiences, but then like I talked about in the Genie Plus episode, I had to talk to a Blue Umbrella and ask them if I could get a splash for like the next day, and they went ahead and gave a splash for the next 2 days, actually. But unfortunately, we didn't get back to Magic Kingdom because it was so annoying to get to. Now, another high, actually, I didn't write down in our notes, Leslie, but on the monorail, we were talking to this family from Seattle, and this was a real nice moment. You know, we were just talking, and their oldest daughter, who was 17, was like chatting with her kids, and I was chatting with the mom. It turned out that that family, who had a 17-year-old and 2 9-year-old twins, were there on a wish trip, and they were staying at Give Kids the World, which is a charity that we've supported in the past, and I know all the Disney community loves to support. It's probably the only thing that the entire Disney community can agree upon positively, the value of Give Kids the World. One of their twin boys had been diagnosed with leukemia a few years before. He's thankfully in remission now, but they were here in Orlando on their wish trip from the Make-A-Wish Foundation and staying at Give Kids the World. And so it was really nice to talk to that family. They asked if I had tips for where to watch Harmonia. So I gave them the Italy tip that I gave last episode. You know, it was really nice to see that family. And that was a real high. It was kind of a real reminder of the positivity and the magic that Disney and Give Kids the World can bring to these families.
Definitely, definitely a high. And glad to hear that they were having a good trip and that you were able to likely improve upon it with a tip or two.
Yeah, the funny thing was, it's embarrassing. I couldn't help myself. I like started asking about, you know, whether they had to use Genie Plus or stuff. And I was like, oh, should I give them advice? But then I didn't realize that if you're on a wish trip, you get a pass that basically you do nothing but lightning lanes, as it should be. So I was glad to see that as well.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I knew that. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So they didn't have to wait in lines for anything. You know, they were going to the front of line for everything. So hope they had a great rest of their trip. I actually saw them on day one of their trip. Oh, the reason why we started talking was because they were asking me if the monorail was going to be running back to the Magic Kingdom because their car was at the Ticket and Transportation Center because they had to drive back to Give Kids the World. So that was really great. A real high of the trip as well. Now, Epcot extended evening hours. A high for Epcot extended evening hours was that Frozen was a walk-on. Of course, my silly 4-year-old daughter who says she loves Frozen, I had to convince her for half an hour. We were like, I split up from the older kids in the family and I was like, do you want to go on Frozen? And she's like, no, I don't want to get wet, because she had gone on it earlier in the day. And so this kid, I finally had to dress her in a poncho on Frozen, Leslie, where you get maybe 5 drops of water on yourself. So this girl had to to or wear a poncho on Frozen. It was pretty embarrassing, although a pretty good photo op. Again, I just didn't know what to say.
Yeah, the things we do for the idiosyncrasies of our children.
She does not like quote-unquote wet rides.
Okay.
I never counted Frozen
as a wet ride.
Exactly. I was like, you love Frozen. Why? Anyway, you get it. Now, I would say the low for Epcot extended evening hours is that Soarin' and Remy's lines, they were pretty long. My wife and older kids, they waited like 20, 25 minutes for Soarin'. And then for Remy's, they tried to get into the line at the end of the night, but the cast member said it was going to be 30 minutes. And looking at that line, maybe it wouldn't have been 30 minutes, but it would have definitely been at least 20. And so I think the thing with Epcot extended evening hours is there are just not as many attractions. Obviously, this will change when Guardians opens. But because of that, the lines are longer. I think Test Track and Frozen were good, but Soarin' for some reason and Remy's, there were much longer lines. And so it is not as valuable if you can only ride two or three. And of course, you have to walk 10 miles between each attraction. So not as good as Magic Kingdom. Just something to note. If you're going for the extended evening hours, definitely Magic Kingdom is the one you want to prioritize, especially if you can only stay up for one night.
For sure. All right. Why don't we talk about day six?
Day six, we did an Animal Kingdom and Hollywood Studios day. My kids agree that they like Animal Kingdom first and Hollywood Studios second. And so Ahai was just getting to do our kids' two favorite parks on the same day. This is the day that I redeemed myself for Genie Plus and was able to get Flight of Passage for the family. My kids got to ride it twice. They really enjoy that attraction. And then another high was Flame Tree Barbecue, which I've never gotten to eat at because the lines are always so long. I was able to mobile order. And unlike Harambe Market, Flame Tree Barbecue has a ton of seating. It's all outdoors. It's just like a huge pavilion slash area with, you know, different levels. And so there are so many tables. It's much easier to find a table outside eating at Flame Tree Barbecue as long as you can get a mobile order. That was a real high, and the food was really good there as well. I would say, Leslie, going back to the whole food thing, aside from the eating food off the floor situation, we did manage to do a better job eating non-burgers, non-chicken tenders later in the week because we were looking for it. Flame Tree Barbecue, Regal Eagle Smokehouse. So definitely check out Flame Tree Barbecue if you're not, you know, going to Satuli Canteen, since I know that's kind of our favorite quick service at Animal Kingdom. Now, the real lows for the Animal Kingdom was, despite being in Animal Kingdom multiple times, did not manage to get my family over to Kite Tales. It was just too far on the other side of the park. This is really hard to cut back and forth across the park. And then, of course, the biggest low on day six was Runaway Railway, Frozen, and Space Mountain all going Genie Plus. Leslie, that one really hurt.
Yeah, I remember messaging you at the time. I'm like, have you seen this? And you were like, what? Because you were in the park. And yeah, I mean, it was a little bit too little too late for your family because you just suffered through the worst crowds basically since the pandemic. And then you get the relief at the very tail end of your trip.
Yeah, I like to believe that, well, whatever. Disney could have done better. I mean, they did it for Christmas. They should have known better for President's Week, but what are you going to do? It is what it is. It was a drop in the bucket at that point. Finishing things off on our last day, as I alluded to before, Ahai was eating at Regal Eagle Smokehouse. There's a nice shaded area by the infamous American Pavilion bathrooms. It's far enough away from the bathroom, so it's not like you're eating next to the bathroom, but it's just on that side of the American Pavilion. It was completely shaded. That was very good. We got ribs, chicken, cornbread. Probably the best thing that we got. It was a super hot day. We were eating in the shade, and you can get watermelon from Regal Eagle Smokehouse, which really helped to cool the kids down. At that point, you know, we were on day seven. It was really hot. They were melting down. Another high is it was the best day we had on Genie Plus at Hollywood Studios. Not all of us went on all of these rides, but someone in our family got to go on Slinky, Rise of the Resistance, Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, Toy Story Mania. And then we ended the trip, of course, where a Chung family trip needed to end with all five of us on Alien Swirling Saucers. So it was a really great end to the trip, a really great last day. That day, we hadn't originally planned to be in the parks on that day, but there was a snowstorm coming through to Boston, so we extended our trip by a day. And so the last high, you know, and this last day was all highs, was that we got to stay at the Hyatt Regency MCO, and we got a room that overlooked the runway. So that was really cool. That is a really great hotel, and I feel like I might stay there more often if I'm leaving on a morning flight, especially because I can book it with my Hyatt points. It's a really cool hotel. I do think that your son might really love that hotel.
Yeah, definitely if we could overlook the runway, but we usually don't have reason to be flying out first thing in the morning, just with the way things work going west from east. We usually leave late in the day and get home reasonably late at night. But yeah, it looks like a good hotel. I've always heard good things about it from, you know, folks in the miles and points community use it a lot because of those Hyatt points, like you mentioned. And one day maybe I'll have reason to stay there.
It is really nice. And we had a 6 a.m. flight, so which that was rough. Shout out to Leslie. Leslie, by the way, you should write an article about this. But shout out to Leslie for giving me tips for how to get everyone ready for the 6 a.m. flight. We had everything laid out. We had all the bags in a row, like literally in a row. It was great to just wake up, put our shoes on, grab our bags, and then walk straight down to TSA. That ended up going pretty well. I was worried about missing that 6 a.m. flight because if we had missed that, you know, it's the end of winter break up here in Boston. Like, we wouldn't have gone back until Tuesday or Wednesday. So it was a great end to the trip. I will say that waking up at 4 a.m., my kids had a ton of sleep debt that took them. I mean, it was the entire Disney World trip plus waking up at 4 a.m. on that last day. They had a lot of sleep debt that it took them a couple days to work through. There were a couple of unforeseen meltdowns from kids of all ages just because of their lack of sleep. But other than that, we ended things off really well, and it was a really great end to a really great trip. Leslie, to close things out, I would love to hear, since you are the master of the early morning flight, how do you deal with sleep debt for your kids, or are they just used to it?
No, I mean, they're not used to it, but we do try to just take it easy whenever we can. We try to sleep on the plane, we encourage them to sleep on the plane and adjust to time zones as soon as we can. I mean, we are often, you know, we're coming often from California to North Carolina where my family lives, so we're changing 3 time zones a lot. It is what it is, and they do get better at it, but it's not fun.
All right. Thank you for that tip, Leslie. I think that will close it out for this second half of the trip report. Thank you again, everyone, for listening. If you have any questions, you can email us, disneydeciphered@gmail.com, and let us know what you think, if you have any questions, comments, or thoughts on the trip. All right, there's going to be one more episode on our February trip, but we also got Star Wars stuff to talk about and stuff as well, so you can look forward to that in the near future. All right, thanks, Leslie.
Thanks, Joe.
But wait, there's more. Did a recording with a special guest, so hope you enjoy it. All right, so I have a special guest here, my oldest daughter, 9 years old. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Hi.
We're going to talk about Wild Africa Trek, but first I want to hear about what is your favorite of the Disney parks and why would you say it's your favorite?
Animal Kingdom, because I love animals.
Yeah, what is your like favorite things to do in Animal Kingdom?
Well, this Wild African Trek count.
Let's not count that for now, besides Wild Africa Trek, since that was your favorite.
I like doing the Wilderness Explorers.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Oh, and Cali River Rapids.
No.
And Flight of Passage.
Okay, that's acceptable.
And Kilimanjaro Safari.
Also acceptable. Cali River Rapids.
No, that's the best ride
in the world. No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Disagree. Agree to disagree. Okay, so let's talk about Wild Africa Trek a little bit. Now, I didn't get to go on this. You just went with Mom. So can you tell us in general, you know, what was going on Wild Africa Trek? Why was it different than the normal Kilimanjaro Safaris?
We got to, like, get closer to them, and we weren't always in the vehicle. So, like, some parts we would climb across, like, a rope bridge over, like, crocodiles and hippos. But we also did a safari tour in, like, a truck, like how you would in Kilimanjaro Safaris.
And then do you have tour guides with you? How many, like, tour guides were going with you the whole time?
We had 2. But, like, at some parts we'd have, like, other people who worked there, like, tell us about things and stuff.
Okay, so did they do, like, lessons or, like, talk to you about the different animals?
Yeah,
or?
So, like, certain ones, like, did fed, like, certain animals, so they would tell us.
Wait, you got to watch them feeding?
Well, we never got to feed anything. Oh, I mean, we were trying to feed the hippos, but they were sleeping.
Oh, well, can't you just wake them up?
No.
Oh, just throw food at their heads.
They won't wake up. Oh. There's, like, vultures trying to peck at them.
Oh, wow. Okay, so what are some of the things, the interesting things that the different tour guides told you about the animals? Did you feel like you were like learning stuff?
A little bit. I don't really remember.
You don't remember?
Yeah.
Not even one fun fact?
Well, they're talking about like hippos, and like they're just telling us like the names of a lot of the hippos. One of them, I think, I don't remember his name. I think it might have been like Henry or something. He's the I think, grandfather of Fiona, like the tiny hippo who they thought wouldn't survive.
All right, so what are some of the different things you got to do? Didn't you have to, like, strap into a harness and stuff like that? Why did they put you into those things?
Like, you could put your water bottle on it, and there's places where you could put your phone, and they gave you, like, straps for your glasses.
Yeah, but why'd you need all that? Where were you guys?
Because we were, like, going on rope bridges over crocodiles, so they didn't really want us to drop anything.
So you went over rope bridges on crocodiles. Were there any other cool places that you kind of hiked over?
Yeah, we got to go through, like, places you wouldn't actually be able to go if you weren't on a trek. So they would trap us in, and then we could walk pretty close to, like, some hippos and crocodiles.
What was the coolest animal that you got close to, or what was your favorite on the trek?
When we went on the safari, we got in a truck, and they brought us around. And then at one point, there's a bunch of ostriches, like, coming at our truck, and then they started to, like, try to, like, do something. Eventually they just went away so that we could keep going.
That was the most exciting thing, not climbing by the crocodiles or whatever?
No, you said the animal. What was a cool animal you saw?
Isn't a crocodile an animal?
I know, but we weren't, whatever.
Okay. All right.
No, but the rope bridges with the crocodiles and hippos were definitely the best part.
Wasn't there a snack? You know, I don't even know. What was the snack they gave you at the end? Was it any good?
It was okay. I didn't really... I'm a picky eater, so I don't eat it all. But
what was it?
It was like prosciutto with mozzarella balls and bread with like some sort of saucy thing that I didn't eat. And they also gave you an edible orchid.
Oh, like a flower?
Yeah, that.
Was that good?
Yeah, I ate it. I ate the petals. It's a very plain tasting.
And what are anything else people need to know if they're thinking about booking or doing the Wild Africa Trek? Like, why would you say people, or what type of people would you say should do the Wild Africa Trek? And what type of people do you say might maybe should skip it?
The rope bridges are a little high, so if you had a fear of heights, maybe you shouldn't do it.
Okay, and then who should do it? People who really love animals, or like people who want to like closer look?
Animals, people who want to get closer to them and want to learn more about them, or sort of looking for like adventure, sort of, kind of.
Do you remember about like how long it was overall?
It was like 3 hours, I think.
Okay. And last question, do you think you would do it again if, you know, I paid for it again?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Well, it's kind of expensive, but we'll see. Maybe when your brother's old enough. Do you think he would like it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. All right, anything else people should know?
You might not always get to see all the things you wanted to see. Like, we weren't really able to see any lions because they were, like, behind the rock.
I see. Kilimanjaro Safaris is like that too, right?
Yeah.
You're just kind of, whatever animals are out, are out.
Oh, and they'll also take pictures of things for you, and they'll take pictures of, like, anything.
Wait, so you could tell them, like, hey, can you take a picture of that?
Yeah, and then they'll take pictures of you, and then they'll like, give it to you later so you can, like, look at them and choose which ones you want.
Oh, and last question, because Mom was just saying this. Is it possible to fall out and fall into the animals?
No, unless you're not properly clipped in. But they always make sure you're clipped in and stuff. Like, on the rope bridges, there are nets below it, so even if you, like, so if you can't step on the boards, you can always walk in the nets because they'll support your weight.
Oh, so even if you weren't clipped in, you like would fall into the net anyway?
Yeah, yes, unless you slip through, like, the sides.
Yeah, Mom was saying some boy was just walking on the nets instead of on the bridge.
Yeah, I mean, because some of the boards are, like, broken and not close enough for you to step.
Do you think, are they broken on purpose so that it seems like
maybe
adventure?
Maybe.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Cali River Rapids is not the best ride.
No,
but
it is.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. Thank you for recording with me.
Ow.